Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is the third day of February 2015, Titanic Tuesday, on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you go to jump into the chat room, and we are all just tickled pink to welcome News Ninja Carol Baker back to the chat room fray. Folks wandering in even now, good evening, Texas P, good evening, Labor Man, good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. You have been badly missed, and good evening, of course, to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran, chat room moderator, and third stage guild navigator, Sparky, who has chosen not to fold space, at least thus far this evening. Thank you, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn. Happy connecting. And the same to you, Jeremy. The same to you. Which reminds me, we got to work on getting the mobile side of the chat room back up. And we will at some point. I feel confident about that. I can announce to you that I am now in the first itsy-bitsy baby step processes of learning to be a Mac user. It has begun. Yes, it arrived today, and so that'll give me a few days to get used to the environment, and then depending on how things shake out this weekend. And I realized I had said that we would have the new mix desk in by the end of the weekend. I'm not quite so sure if that's going to happen, for a very good reason. Or at least I hope you will find it to be a good reason. My daughter, my precious Margie, is going to turn 21 this weekend. Boggles my mind. It was hardly any time at all, it seems, ago when I was holding her in my arms and I looked down at her. She was a newborn, and I said, Margie, I love you. Welcome to the world. I hope to be a good father to you. And as the first piece of wisdom that I pass on to you, let me say to you that all liability is based upon fault. But it was 21 years ago. And so I want to be there because Margie, being a 21-year-old, you know, she doesn't want to go get loaded or anything, but she wants to proudly say, and I will have a beer, as is the right of any 21-year-old. You know what 21-year-olds probably want to say, I will have a beer, more than any other 21-year-olds on their birthday? Mormons. But they can't. Margie can. That's what I'm being told, Carol. Carol noting, once you go Mac, baby, you never go back. And I think that may be entirely true. Marty with a note. Welcome to the Mac, Macverse. So I'm going to start learning that. I'm going to do some trial test runs with the mix desk, and before we even put it into the system here, see what happens. And I'm really excited, and I want to thank all of you who helped to make that possible. Because I was worrying about whether the intro would actually play here, because the hard drive was just grinding and grinding and grinding. But no, that has happened, and I'm looking forward to to seeing, oh, please, Jesus, let it work. Okay, but anyway. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Those of you who are longtime followers of the program, members of our community, I don't like to use the word audience or listeners because this is a two-way communication kind of a thing. But those of you who are familiar may know that Titanic Tuesday gets its name from something our buddy Jim heard on the over there in the America's fifth smallest radio market or whatever it is in Beckley back years ago when a 962nd tier right-wing blatherer took a call from one of his mouth-breathing faithful who said, Steve, how come it is that there is clam shells in the rocks in West Virginia? And he said, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. And so ever since then, Tuesdays have been devoted to the Titanic intellect on display routinely in the down in the swamps and in the fever dreams and in the cesspit that is the American right wing. No, still no word on the fate of the Titanic salad plates or salad forks for that matter. Yes, indeed, head on radionetwork.com. This is where you go to jump into the chat room, and I think we're going to be having a wonderful, wonderful time of it this evening. It's always a lot of fun. You should jump in as well at your leisure. It's easy, and like everything else associated with the Horn, it's free. We're not selling anything here. No vacuum cleaner ads for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off of Swedish mattresses with foam designed by NASA that you lie upon while you wait for your herbal hair regrowth remedy to put a lawn on your slickety pate, or wait for your herbal erection producing compound to produce. No, all while listening to your Bose Wave radio and contemplating the fact that you need to buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. No, there's nothing for sale here. It's all free. So jump into the chat room. Ken just jumped in. Good evening, Ken. And more will be along presently and pleasantly, I presume. So, no, it is Titanic Tuesday, and we do celebrate the Titanic intellect on display. And not that right before airtime I went over to our moth-filled closet and dragged out my threadbare purple prophet's robe with the appliqué and peeling off moons and stars and the glow in the dark paint on it that says, "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby?" I didn't, and I also left lying the magic eight ball with the crack in the bottom and the answer and the perpetual answer hazy, ask again later. Nope, I didn't. But I do amaze me sometimes. Truly, I do. Oh, by the way, an inquiry before I tell you why I amaze me. An inquiry on this Titanic Tuesday, the third day of February, 2015. And by the way, I heard my first robin this morning. Yes, I was sitting there doing some of my reading for the day, having a cup of coffee. Okay, decaf, but leave me alone. I sure wish those guys at Blue Tribe Coffee that advertise with Malloy would bring a decaf on board. I'd love to do business with them, but, you know, it's not worth me consuming caffeine and thinking I'm good. No. But I wish they would. Anybody want to get a note to them? Hey, how about some decaf? At least last I checked, they weren't doing decaf. But the minute they do, I'll order me some, because I believe in supporting people that support the people that matter to me. But we had the first robin, and really it wasn't the first robin. It's not like robins are migratory. They just kind of go to ground, and they roost, and they survive brutal winters. But I heard one, and what was surprising is that it got down to like 14 degrees here last night. Now, I don't know if the chirping I was hearing was a robin yelling, "Screw this! Screw this! Screw this!" But a robin was certainly chirping. Because he was a red, red robin, and he'd come bob, bob, bobbing along. Or then again, maybe it's like my dad used to say, "Bullshit," he said, the robin, and he turned and walked away. But I heard the first robin, but I heard the first robin while I was doing some reading. And again, not to make it, but so last night on the program, we had a note from Jim, who asked, "We require mandatory vaccinations in West Virginia schools, do we not?" And if you were to go back in the archives, I think you would find that when I read the email, I said something like, "Oh, sure, we do now. But just wait, because this teabagger legislature we got is going hard at it, and they're not going to let something like that just lay around gathering moss." Little did I know, and God knows there are those who would say, "Don't overestimate yourself, Bob. You really don't know how little you know." Little did I know. Oh, by the way, I noted over at the Malloy site that Mike and Kathy are a rerun tonight, so I have a question to ask. And hopefully there will be enough time to sort it out. I mentioned it to Sparky earlier, or maybe late last night. I mentioned it to Sparky because Sparky, being a third stage guild navigator and longtime moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, is integral to this process. I thought we might... endeavor or consider, if you're interested — you are entirely the decision makers on this, I'm not — but if you are interested, I thought we might consider having a day after Groundhog Day, Titanic Tuesday, epic front porch marathon, and go past airtime, if you would like to do that. If you don't want to, it'll just be a regular three-hour program, and that'll be the end of it. But we're going to have fun in those 3 hours one way or the other. If, however, you'd like to have an epic Titanic Tuesday on the front porch, we can. And we will go past the 9 p.m. mark, since Mike is a rerun, and we'll see how that and maybe get a rousing good chat group going in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and maybe somebody on the gizmo line. You never know how that's going to turn out. So, yours to consider. Now, anyway, back to my non-profit status. In both senses of the word, not for profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, and most assuredly non-profit, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, which means nobody has to wish peace upon me unless you absolutely want to. Back to my non-profit status. Oh, cool. I hadn't seen it before. Labor man telling me in the chat room that Blue Tribe does have decaf available. Well, I will hie myself there over thither and try it out and send them a note and tell them that I heard about them on Malloy. You see, that's how you make that kind of stuff work. That's what makes them want to keep advertising. It means that their message is reaching via the right. It's not like we don't know how to do this kind of thing. It's just that we don't. So that's good to hear. Yum, yum. Next up, a little coffee with chicory into the bargain. Maybe when I get around to feeling like doing some beignets. Oh, hi, Barbie. Good to see you back, too. Anyway, back to my non-profit status. So I sent that I mentioned that response to Jim's email on the program last night. And lo and behold, I got up this morning and I had a note from Robert in Morgantown. You may recall that this past Thursday, we spent a considerable amount of time, Dr. Bill and I and several of you, in conversation about what this reactionary, insurgent, right-wing legislature had been up to in creating the Fire Social Studies Teachers Act of 2015. Well, they're not done by any stretch of the imagination. They've got lots of mean and stupid yet to produce, these teabaggers, these insurgents, these anti-West Virginia, anti-Americans who have taken over the state legislature. And I don't have any problem. I don't have any problem referring to them as such, because you cannot introduce bills to try to take health care away from your fellow West Virginians, your fellow Americans, and call yourself pro-American or pro-West Virginian. You cannot introduce bills to slash the wages of working people and call yourself pro-West Virginia or pro-America. You can't do that. So, no, I think these sickening Gadsden flag-waving, snake flag-endorsing freaks are anti-West Virginia and anti-American. They're damn sure anti-West Virginia health and safety. They're anti-West Virginia community, because almost as if on cue, via Robert and Morgantown, I found out today that yesterday, even almost as I was speaking, in the West Virginia House of Delegates, there was introduced by delegates Cowles, Lane, Sabanya, Householder, Paston, Kessinger, Fast, McGeehan, and Storch. Really? No, not Larry Storch. He was funny. It was introduced House Bill 2556. It was referred to the Committee on Health and Human Resources. After that, it will head over to the Judiciary Committee. Guess what it is? You probably know. I mean, what's in the news today? What's everybody talking about now that we're not talking about the Super Bowl anymore, and we're still not sure if Scott and Sweden saw it, so we're not going to talk about its outcome? Because we're a full-service radio network here in a community, and we try to make sure that we don't ruin things. You know, no spoilers. Dumbest damn play call since Pontius Pilate washed his hands. That's all I'm going to say. But anyway. There it is, a bill to amend and reenact West Virginia Code Section 16-3.4 and 16-3.5 of the 1931 as amended, all relating generally to mandatory, come on, everybody, sing with me, immunizations. That's right. Even as I was suggesting to Jim last night that the teabagging Gadsden flag, snake flag endorsing, worshiping, waving weirdos would get around to a vaxxer bill, they had already done it. And so remember, all the language that I'm about to share with you, and I know it's West Virginia and it probably seems inconsequential to the rest of the country, but it matters, because we've been the test case for oh so much of the abuse in this country, and also test cases for good things. So we've apparently got a wholesale rewrite of West Virginia Code 16-3.4, which is titled, okay, so Article 3 of Section 16 is titled Prevention and Control of Communicable and Other Infectious Diseases. 16-3.4 is compulsory immunization of school children required vaccinations, exemptions, health emergencies, appeals. You remember the compounded amounts of stupid that we found last Thursday in the Fire Social Studies Teachers Act of 2015? Apparently they have not yet run out. They're teabaggers. There's an infinite supply, right? Yeah, right. So, again, just whole cloth, new words. When a resident birth occurs, sounds like a video game. No, that's Resident Evil. Oh, that's what happens when a resident Republican birth occurs, you know, Resident Evil. When a resident birth occurs, the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources shall promptly provide parents of the newborn child with information on immunization. You could kind of put a period right there, couldn't you? And you'd really have the bases covered. We're going to provide information to the parents about immunization, including those including those mandated by the state for admission to a public, private, or parochial school in this state. That is the single most straightforward and sane sentence in the entire bill. Subparagraph B. Except as provided in subsection C of this section, and let me tell you, subsection C is some more kind of subsection. I mean, this is no lightweight pissant subsection. This is a subsection with some real goddamned ideological heft. Except as provided in subsection C, so we know that everything that comes after that phrase is essentially meaningless. All children entering school in this state must be age-appropriately immunized against chickenpox, hepatitis B, polio, measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus, whooping cough, and any other disease requiring vaccination as established by legislative rule promulgated pursuant to the provisions of Article 3, Chapter 29A of this code by the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources. In other words, if they develop a vaccine against Kenyan Muslim usurpation, the legislature could maybe meet in an emergency session and declare that everybody has to get that their vaccine. The legislative rule, as required by this section, shall set forth the dosage of the immunization as follows. DTAP, DTP, TD, TDAP, yada yada. Polio, measles, mumps, hepatitis B, chicken pox. And then provisional enrollment may occur following receipt of one dose of the vaccine and is allowed for a period of up to 8 months until the required dosage is completed. Well, not a hell of a lot to argue with there now, is there? No mention of the human papillomavirus. Nope. Where's that? Isn't there a meningitis vaccine? Oh, well, never mind. What's a little meningitis among friends? And then, like I told you, C, exemptions. See how straightforward that was? That took almost no time at all to read, even with me editorializing. A and B. C, exemptions. Get the hockey puck. Oh, for sake, get the hockey puck. Here we go. Strap in. This is not going to be pleasant. C, exemptions. Remember they said earlier that all children must be immunized except in the case of the exemptions listed in subparagraph C? Here comes C, and it's like a freight train. C, exemptions. A parent or guardian may apply for an exemption to the provisions of this section as follows. One, okay, we're gonna try to work a little bit of, so we're not going to start out with the drama and the fun. One, medical exemption. A parent or guardian of a child entering the schools of this state may request a medical exemption from a required vaccination for his or her minor child. If the parent or guardian of the child or ward presents a certificate to the school signed by a physician who is duly registered and licensed to practice medicine in West Virginia, or a contiguous state, which sets forth the opinion and the basis of the opinion of the physician examining the child or ward that immunization of the child is medically impossible or improper for any or all of the following diseases, including chickenpox, hepatitis B, diphtheria, polio, rubella, measles, tetanus, whooping cough, and any other disease requiring vaccination as established by legislative rule, yada, yada, or because of another compelling medical reason, immunization of the child or ward or any of all the following diseases, including chickenpox, hepatitis B, diphtheria, polio, measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus, whooping cough, and any other disease requiring vaccination as established by legislative rule, should not be required for public, private, or parochial school attendance. The secretary, and this is the fun part, the parent may apply for the exemption, but upon presenting that right there, even if it's still got little dirt marks on the paper from the grass skirt, never mind. That's a little bit Western centric, and I retract my. No matter if there are duck droppings on the paper from where the doctor was quacking. Yeah. So the parent may apply, but the secretary shall grant the exemption. Mandatory, you know? No questions asked. It's kind of like the way concealed weapons permits work out. Shall grant. Additionally, a parent or guardian of a child entering the schools of this state for the first time may request a medical exemption from a required vaccination for his or her minor child if immunity against chickenpox, hepatitis B, diphtheria, polio, measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus, whooping cough, or any of the other diseases can be shown through laboratory testing. Okay, laboratory testing. You know, titers, like we were talking about last night in regard to Dr. Jacks out in Arizona, whose three-year-old leukemia-stricken baby girl has been exposed to measles because of some dumbass vaxxer who left, Orange County and went to Disneyland. Remember, we're not talking about the schools here. We're talking about an entirely choice-driven trip to Disneyland. So that's the medical exemption in which a parent may apply and the secretary shall grant. So that guarantees, and to be fair, in Dr. Jack's letter from last night, you may recall that he has a 10-month-old son who is not old enough to receive any vaccinations. And then, of course, there are those who, for instance, in regard to most live virus formulations, is egg-based. And there's a certain portion of the population that's allergic to egg products and would therefore be allergic to the vaccine. They don't have to take the vaccine. And that's medically reasonable. We're not going to insist that people get sick because of something that we know is toxic to them. Okay, Disneyland is in Orange County. Thank you, Marty. Makes more and more sense now, doesn't it? What else does Orange County have? Like cockroaches, like rats? Yeah, Republicans. Yes. So that's your medical exemptions. Here comes the fun part. And I later found out from Robert in Morgantown that, lo and behold, West Virginia and Mississippi Stan, West Virginia Stan and Mississippi Stan. I have to put the Stan behind West Virginia now because, well, by God, the voters have spoken and they wanted to be a Stan state. They were tired of, something approaching reason and rational behavior in a legislature. Not that we had a hell of a lot of it, because most of the Democrats, we found out, were Democrat, Republican light, and last year we learned that they were willing to vote for a fetal pain bill that, bless his little heart, it's the damn deep, most decent thing he's ever done, that GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, had to veto, and, well, never mind. But only West Virginia stand and Mississippi stand did not provide a religious exemption for vaccinating children. And I'm fine by that. Why, if you think you've got a religious exemption, then take your happy ass to court and sue. There can't be that many of them. Except that now there are, because you got to remember that teabaggery verges over into almost religious status because of the fact that so many of its participants and so many of its practitioners are evangelical fundamentalists to begin with. I hope you did not take the hockey puck out. A parent or a guardian with a, and where have we heard this phrase before? Oh, look. A parent or guardian with a strongly, wait, gonna do this right. Strongly held religious belief. Hobby Lobby. But wasn't that Hobby Lobby decision just narrow? I mean, you probably couldn't, it was so narrow you couldn't fit a playing card between, between the sheets of no. Narrow my butt. As long as the parent or guardian has a strongly held religious belief that his or her minor child should not be subject to a required immunization, which is, I mean, really, if we're going to be, I mean, let's not take the English language out behind the barn and just screw it because we can. Let's have some honest drafting here. Let's go back. A parent or guardian with a strongly held religious belief that his or her minor child should, if God wills it, be subjected to horrible childhood diseases which may wind up killing said child, may seek an exemption from any or all required vaccinations for his or her minor child entering the schools of this state for the first time. To apply, and here's where it gets fun. To apply for the exemption, the parent or guardian shall walk into the school board speaking in tongues and juggling snakes. No. To apply for exemption, the parent or guardian shall execute an affidavit. I wish they wouldn't use the word execute. Stating their religious tenet. No, I'm not kidding. Tenet. Apparently these are all sincerely held religious beliefs among people who are landlords because they have religious tenants. And, of course, the tenants would have to be religious because the landlord's religious. I mean, Merca, right? Fucking stupid teabaggers. I mean, this got introduced in the legislature of West Virginia with tenant, and I know I'm being a grammar pig here and a spelling pig, I guess, too, but this is an official document manifesting the proposed will of the people of the state of West Virginia, including several generations of dead relatives of mine who would have run screaming into the night, tearing at their hair at the idiocy of not knowing the difference between tenant and tenet. Jesus, these people are dumb. God damn, they're stupid. An affidavit stating their religious tenet against immunizations. Well, her name is Betty Sue, and she lives in apartment 3B. and she is against immunizations. No. But see, these dumb bastards will pass this, and I'm looking forward to the first lawsuit. I'm sorry. These people applied, but they did not cite in an affidavit that they have a religious tenet against immunizations. What do you mean? They say right there that the little baby Jesus, is the little baby Jesus ridding from them, Your Honor? Is he? Point taken, counsel. Case dismissed. Shh. Don't tell the wingnut, teabagger, Gadsden flag flying, knuckle walking, mouth breathing, snakes, serpent juggling, strychnine swigging, floor rolling, tongue speaking freaks, okay? Because this will be fun. But let's presume that they actually meant tenet. This is still poor drafting. An affidavit stating their religious tenet or tenets against immunization. Okay. So they've got their religious tenet. Then they take their religious tenet affidavit over to Dr. Thumbfingers, a physician licensed to practice in West Virginia, pursuant to the licensing physician code, or another contiguous state, so that means you couldn't get a doctor in Alabama, but you could get one in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Kentucky, or Virginia. All right. And it has to be done on a form set forth in an emergency rule promulgated by the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources pursuant to the uniform. The teabaggers running the madhouse that the West Virginia legislature has become then state that the signature of the physician indicates that the parents have been given information regarding the benefits of vaccination and the risks associated with not vaccinating have been explained to the parents or guardian face-to-face and should include the date this education took place. Should, not must. So that's kind of a maybe. Should. Words mean things. Should. And, okay, what kind of information? Because isn't it interesting that when they're worried about ladies' lady parts and the precious little fetuses, they get into such minute detail, and the next thing you know, they're out there talking about the relative merits of various and sundry transvaginal transducers. But in this case, we're just going to let the religious goobers, we're going to say that a doctor should at least tell them something, but not must, and we're not going to promulgate any rules about what needs to be. Wait a minute. What about the women what about pregnant women who have to watch a goddamned ultrasound movie to get an abortion at 14 freaking weeks? What about them? Nope, sorry, got to have some detail because that's murder. Well, what the? If refusing to vaccinate your child for religious reasons is not at least the contemplation of some form of homicide, or at the very least the wounding of a child, what the hell is it? It's religious freedom in America. Wolverines! And so we continue, because we have to. So they've gotten their affidavit that should include the date the education took place, but it doesn't must include the affidavit. The affidavit is required to include a list of required immunizations to allow a parent or guardian to request an exemption for his or her child from any or all of the required immunizations. In the affidavit, the parent or guardian shall state that their religious belief is in conflict with the child receiving the immunizations, required by this section and shall indicate the specific vaccines for which an exemption is being requested. Well, okay. However, let's consider this for a moment. And I certainly welcome your thoughts on the topic. I always do. On all topics. I don't know any other way to say this except to say this religion business is getting out of hand. Has gotten out of hand. Will have been out of hand for quite some time. Okay, so you want to go to you know what, the I guess Roman Catholic Church churches still offer Mass every blessed day, sometimes two or three times a day. You know what, you want to show up for every Mass to get your cookie and your swig of wine, good for you. I got no problem with you. If you don't want to go, if you're not, I got no problem with that either. But this is one of those moments where we see religion taking precedence over the health and well-being of entire communities. And in any culture, and I realize I'm on shaky ground here, that considers itself even remotely enlightened, it is intolerable. Why? And we're just going to use broad examples here. Why should my children, whom I have, and you know, vaccinations aren't fun, and babies cry when they get shots. I'm not particularly fond of them. That's why we don't have to worry about me ever becoming any kind of a needle-based drug addict. But that represents a little bit of pain that we say is okay relative to the massive amount of misery that can be caused by these childhood illnesses. Witness my recent experience with the shingles vaccine. It made me sick as shit for about a week. Busted out in a few little poxes and itched and scratched a little bit and ran a fever and sweated some and generally felt like crud. But all along I kept saying, you know, it's worth it not to have the shingles, or even if I get the shingles, to not have as bad a case. Because I had personally borne witness to people having shingles and know how miserable it is and can, in fact, be life-threatening. And so that is, in fact, the kind of calculus into which parents enter when they follow the law and go get their children vaccinated. Now, this is all for purposes of entering schools in West Virginia. If you're a homeschooler, you know, if you're one of those parents who keeps your children at home and teaches them about that glorious time when the Americans, when Lewis and Clark stopped the Nazis from bombing Pearl Harbor at the Alamo with Daniel Boone, and Ben Franklin flew to the rescue on his flying saucer. If you're one of those people, you don't have to get your children immunized at all, because they're never going to enter the public schools or parochial schools or private schools. They're never going to enter the schools. But you know what? Your filthy little disease-ridden children will enter stores or Disneyland or church, or doctor's offices, maybe. Here, kid, hold this snake. Where they will put the entire community at risk. See, one of the things that we are learning out of this little controversy is that those of us who had immunizations, who are adults and managed never to have measles, should probably go get a booster. Because it does wear off after time. I don't exactly know what my status is because I had the... Can't win the effing lottery, but by God, I was the 1 in 10 million, or whatever it was, who got the measles vaccine back in the 60s, and by the spring of 1972 had a whopping sick case of the measles myself, which, of course, was brought into the school by some unvaccinated child. That's what's going on here. These delicate sensibilities about people's various and sundry superstitions have gotten completely out of hand. When we are willing, and again, I guess 48 other states already do this, when we are willing to let parents endanger the children of other parents within their community by refusing vaccination, well, what? And we're nowhere near done with this. What good is community? What good is safety? What good is national security? If something is stupid, I mean, we had a national hissy fit over Ebola when one person died and none of them were Americans. Chris Christie forced a woman who was completely safe to live in a tent. But he says that parents should have personal choice as to whether or not to let their children be little walking incubators for childhood diseases and the measles virus is fascinating. It's airborne. And it can remain in the air and quite alive for 4 hours after introduction. So, disease wagon fundy kid walks in a room, walks out, 4 hours later, somebody else walks in and boom, hello measles! That's what we're dealing with here. By the way, note coming in from Marshall via News Ninja Carol Baker. If the writers of this bill can't differentiate between tenant and tenant, the legal argument fails and should be retracted until such time they can learn to spell and, by all means, take their time. Well, that whole learning to spell thing could take years. We're talking about teabaggers here. But like any good Ronco or KTEL commercial, wait, there's more. Plenty of teabagging, Gadsden flag waving genius to go around here. Subparagraph C3 states that documentation shall be submitted to the school where the child will attend. The school shall provide a copy of the required affidavit to the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources within 15 calendar days of receiving the request for an exemption. There is, however, no right to know on the part of the parents who did the right thing and had their children vaccinated. There's no right to know on the part of the parents who have taken care to see that their children are vaccinated, or more importantly, the parents of children who, for some legitimate reason, cannot receive the vaccination, that the weird little evil jellical fundy children are walking around, you know, little disease factories that they are. I hate talking about children that way. It's not the children's fault. If you sat down and spoke rationally with the child and said, honey, I can give you a shot now and it's going to hurt a little bit, but you'll never get a disease that's going to make you itch all over and run a terrible fever and throw up and have diarrhea and be miserable. You want the shot or do you want the disease? I'll take the shot, please. Because the children can be rational. It's the parents in their denim skirt, the women in their denim skirts down to their shoe tops and their hair done up to Jesus and their Elvis sideburn wearing husbands. No, in the name name of Jesus. And because it says right there in Genesis that lo, verily did Abimelech look upon the land and did see that the land was diseased and said, yea, verily I shall trust my Lord God to protect me from the pestilence. And he did trust the Lord God, and the pestilence did not strike Abimelech and those of his loins. And yea, verily, Abimelech's people did survive unto the multitudes. Hallelujah, glory. It's those assholes that are the problem. And I got no problem calling them assholes, because they are. Because if you are so sunk in your weird, superstition-driven sense of privilege that you think you have some God-given right to infect perfectly innocent children, well, then hell ain't never going to be hot enough for you, brother and sister. So we've got, you know, no parents get to know which of the little children are walking. You know, it's viral roulette. Because we're just got, you know, as long as they've got religious tenets, we're going to let these freaks send their children to, right. Oh, and by the way, Marshall, I suspect that if it, by the time this thing gets to committee and goes through the markup phase, that they'll fix the tenets, because there's got to be one, at least one, member of the West Virginia legislature who's going to go, oh, my God, you're kidding, and think, motion, I'd like to move to amend the bill, right? So we get to subparagraph C, subparagraph 4, suspension. I first read that word and thought, maybe this means there are certain circumstances in which the child can be told they can't come to school. No. The Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources may temporarily suspend an exemption for a student who is not immunized and exclude the student from attending school during an... Okay, so they kind of can suspend the kid from attending school during an outbreak or health emergency. Here, let's see if we can't do a little drafting work on that. The Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources may temporarily close the barn doors after the horse is long damn gone when there's an outbreak or health emergency. Because that's what that says, isn't it? So you've got a little kid who, because of his parents' weirdo religious beliefs, teabaggers, and have refused to immunize the child, and the child has then been sent forth to school as a walking chemical weapon. Well, okay, not a chemical weapon, a walking biological weapon. You know, the kind of thing that we went to Iraq and killed a million civilians to prevent. Oh, but they're doing it for Jesus. That's all right. So the little walking biological weapon goes into the school carrying all of this filth because mommy and daddy have deeply held religious beliefs, and they've submitted an affidavit kept in a mayonnaise jar on Funkin' Wagnall's front porch. Old Carson fan here. And the disease breaks out, and the secretary is allowed to send little Typhoid Mary home after it's way too late. The student may not return or be admitted to school until the outbreak or health emergency has been resolved. And the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources, or his or her designee, approves the return or admittance to school. That or designee, so that could be a principal, a board of education. Right. I mean, they really don't tell us. Mm-hmm. this is just stunning. There's a certain sick, twisted beauty in the ignorance with which this piece of attempted legislation is freighted. Acting after the fact. Okay, teabagger legislature, where's the disease outbreak or health emergency going to come from? Because remember, we're sending little toxic Tammy home to keep her from getting whatever is there, but, you know, chances are she's going to go home with it anyway. That's the way the teabag legislature's thinking. But the fact of the matter is, it's little tetanus Timmy who's going to be bringing it to school in the first place. And again, I remind you, no parent of any child who has done the right thing has any right to know set forth anywhere in this document. Now, I'm not talking about retribution or meanness or anything, but you know what? If you live in a community, like, you know, the schools are community schools, right? I mean, we're not sending our little hillbilly children away to Phillips Exeter Academy in Andover. Now, are we? No, we aren't. If mommy and daddy find out, lots of mommies and daddies find out, that the serpent handlers up the holler are refusing to vaccinate, maybe they could just have a word with them, neighbor to neighbor. Not talking about threatening to burn them out or anything, but just listen. This is, yeah, but our religion. Okay, fine. Then homeschool your children. And don't take them to the grocery store. Don't ever let them out of the house. That's your choice. But my children will not play with your children. Because you are, by your religious choice, a cesspool of disease. We're paying in excess of $15,000 for this session to every member of the legislature to come up with this kind of crap. Kid you not. It's really, really hard to catch Ebola. It's really, really easy to get measles. Which one is engendering the anti-government paranoia of the right wing? How about that? The one that's easy to catch. So I just happened to be watching Jose Diaz-Balart this morning on MSNBC. When, yea, verily, lo and behold, along comes Representing Sean Duffy, a Republican from Wisconsin, in whom I have some interest because he happens to be the teabagger who represents the district that includes my dear, 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 dear friends in Ashland and Iron counties who have so bravely battled against the weirdos and sick profiteering bastards who want to destroy everything decent about their lives by digging a toxic waste trench 1,400 feet deep, 22 miles long, and a half a mile wide through some of the most pristine lands extant in this country today. So somebody booked, maybe the booker there for Jose Diaz-Balart, knew that Sean Duffy, teabagger, could be counted on to say something hopelessly stupid. Well, if so, that person earned their money today, because he did. Jose Diaz-Balart to his credit or discredit, depending on how you look at these things, managed to stay in his chair, not begin uncontrollably screaming or tearing at his clothing when, upon being asked about vaccinations, responded, "Well, I want there to be my choice as a parent." Now, Sean Duffy has treated his wife's uterus like a clown car. He has 7 children. Sean Duffy said, "I want that to be my choice as a parent. I know my kids best. I know what morals and values are right for my children. I think we should not have an oppressive state telling us what to do." Not really an oppressive state. Because see, that's what government's doing when it says that it wants children to have vaccines to prevent them from having misery-inducing illnesses. And there's lots of them. I mean, you heard the measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, diphtheria, polio, tetanus. Tetanus. Whooping cough. Pertussis. I mentioned polio. We eradicated polio, didn't we? Yeah, that's before there were teabaggers. And that's also, we also managed to eradicate, remember, we managed to eradicate polio because there were a lot of people who saw what polio did. In high school, one of my best friends, his dad, survived a childhood onset of polio. He's a brilliant man, a brilliant man. I looked up to him. And he raised a brilliant son, my best friend. And he couldn't walk because polio had stolen that from him. People saw what polio did, and when the opportunity for a world to not have polio came along, people who had seen the awfulness of the disease said, "Let's not have anybody else ever have that again. This is part of that curse that comes with so short a life in human terms." None of these anti-vaxxers have ever seen or been vomited on or infected by a child with measles or mumps or rubella, chickenpox. And so they just live in their little privilege bubble and say things like Dr. Wolfson said to CNN. We reported on this last night. My child is pure. Vaccinations. I want that to be my choice as a parent. I know my kids best. I know what morals and values are right for my children. I think we should not have an oppressive state telling us what to do. An oppressive state. This goes back to what I said last night about coercion. It's not coercion to suggest that it's a good thing to pay taxes so we can have some roads. Rand Paul and that thing on his head have declared that not vaccinating children against measles is a liberty issue. And he was really shitty with a pretty does, right? With a reporter from not exactly liberal bastion CNBC telling her that I guess you wouldn't recognize a liberty issue because you don't believe in liberty. I'm paraphrasing pretty broadly, but that was the gist of it. So if you think your community should be protected against disease, you hate liberty? Yes, as a matter of fact, you do. You hate liberty. And by way of punctuation to all of this, rather interesting story. David Edwards reporting over at Raw Story. That there is a blog called the Insufferable Tolerance blog. And there was a post there over the weekend that said that the thought process behind blaming autism for why one does not vaccinate is, in their words, incredibly insulting. This anti-vaxxer was basically saying she would rather expose her child to disease rather than take the risk of having an autistic child, even though autism and vaccination are not linked. Rand Paul has now declared that he has seen children who were walking, talking, perfectly healthy, who then got a vaccination and were reduced to troglodytes. My word, not his. He actually said that. I remember when part of the way that we knew that was it 1L Michelle or was it Mussolini who said that... I've had people tell me stories about how they were had healthy children until they got vaccinations, and then they were just like, you know, all riri. Enter one Taylor Raylene Fiddler, who commented on the Insufferable Tolerance blog. Among other things, she noted that she herself is autistic. And she said, it never ceases to amaze me how scared anti-vaxxers are of autism. How they have no idea how completely ridiculous and offensive they are being, I will never understand. They would rather have dead children than have children like me. And that just makes me sad, especially since that fear has absolutely no basis and puts so many lives at risk. I think about my mom and dad saying and doing the things they do, and I feel very defeated and worthless. I can't imagine how the autistic children of anti-vaxxers feel. But fine. If they want me to be a monster, I'll be a monster. Roar, anti-vaxxers! Roar!
Come back. I was going to make espresso.
She closed saying, I'm so glad to see I'm not alone in feeling this and that people both on and off the spectrum are sick of anti-vaxxers using fear-mongering about autism, among many other things, as justification for their bad choices. Now, really, what other things are there for us than ostracism? To say to the children, to say to the anti-vaxxer parents, listen, my kid is not going to be in contact with your kid. Those of us who are concerned about gun safety. Because that's a fair question, isn't it? I mean, granted, it drives the teabaggers nuts, but pardon me, do you have loose guns in your house? Do you have guns that are loaded but aren't locked down? Oh, I'm sorry. My children can't play with your children. Because I don't want anyone getting blown away in your house, least of all my children. Yeah? I mean, is that wrong? And
interesting question coming from Tim from L.A. Couldn't anti-vaxxer parents be charged with child endangerment or even murder if their kids get sick and or die? What about if the kid sickens some other child? But see, you do that at your peril because then they start screaming about how they're being persecuted in the name of Jesus. And the martyrs start crawling out from behind the baseboards. Yeah. So we'll take a little break and fire up what I hope will be a Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday on the front porch. Remember, if you want to join the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, you need to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and Sparky will then add you to the group, and you'll be part of this ongoing conversation. We welcome you to it. If you want to reach the program by traditional telephony, you can dial 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Okay? By the way, big thanks going out to Roger. Roger finished off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge for us before the 24-hour window closed on the challenge. Thank you so very much, Roger. And so that leaves us this evening needing to raise $150, because we try to raise $150 every evening, and thus far of it, we have raised zero. So we're actually a little bit out front right now, but we won't be if we don't get the fundraising taken care of this evening. Of course, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, and if you prefer to operate via the traditional mail, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801, with the gentle reminder to make checks and money orders not payable to Bob Kincaid, but to The Horn, because that makes it easy for and possible for Boss Man Wayne then to deal with them. So jump right in. The conversation is fine. It is 13 minutes past the hour. A little late jumping to the break, but let's get the conversation going. Because after all, this is, you know, conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Hey, why did I play this? 18 minutes past the hour. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. I like saying that. I'm Bob Kincaid. I say it all the time. BobKincaid@gmail.com is the address. @BobKincaid is my Twitter handle. And Bob Kincaid is my Facebook presence as well. You can contact the program in just about any one of those ways. No, actually, in any one of those ways. Hey, let's check out the Horn Molloy Skype chat group for this Titanic Tuesday on the front porch. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How about you?
Well, remember the other day I told you the trees are starting to bloom?
Yeah.
They are. I was going to town the other day, and I noticed a couple almond trees are blooming. And then an aviary truck passed me with a load of bees headed out. And then, you know what's going to happen to us this weekend, Thursday night, we're supposed to get hit with another Pineapple Express.
Will it be freezing cold?
No, but it will knock all them blooms off them trees.
Yeah, true. Well, as of tomorrow night, we've still managed to dodge a whole hell of a lot of winter here. But let's see, last night we got down to about 15, and no, Thursday night's low is 12. So, but hey, Sunday we get all the way up to 50, and tomorrow we get up to 52. Trust me when I say that that is unusual.
All right, I'm going to have to check what we're at. 62.
Shut up. Yeah, 62 at 4:20 in the afternoon, right? Hey, it's 4:20, everybody. Yeah. Funny how that works out. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Back from a long time on the road, Carol Baker, News Ninja. Hey, Carol.
Hi, I'm so glad to be stationary.
Oh, I'll bet you are.
You have no idea.
Never so happy to cross that Hooterville city limit line and hear the joyous strains of Uncle Daddy!
And the soft melodic strains floating over the lake of dueling banjos.
No, don't you know? Absolutely. And lo and behold, your sister is with us as well. Good evening, Barbie.
Good evening. She's sick.
Oh, you sound it, you poor thing.
I'm laughing at you guys, and it's making me cough. Every time I laugh, I go into a spasm here. But I'm good. I'm good.
Well, we'll take that into account. But I'm. We'll take that into account, but I'm not. I offer no guarantees that we might not make you laugh again. Although there's every possibility I might also put you to sleep. That happens with equal frequency.
You've done that to me before.
I know. That's why they call me Bob Somonex Kincaid.
It's not because you're boring.
No. It's that voice.
That hypnotic voice. Yes. God only knows what else I'm implanting in your subconscious at the same time.
Uh-oh. Sorry.
I try to warn people against falling asleep with me talking, but yeah.
It's good to be back on though.
And Steve, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you doing?
Welcome aboard. Glad you could join us.
Glad I could be here.
So, has anybody got a bee under the bonnet, burr under the saddle, anything like that?
Yeah, I'd like to say that Dr. Salk, he'd be just so dismayed with this guy who, I think he made the vaccine for polio.
Yes, yes. And see, but that's the change that right-wing conservatism has wrought in this country, Steve. We used to be a country that understood the value of preventing children from getting god-awful childhood illnesses. Now, not so much. I mean, for God's sakes, I grew up 8 miles, almost exactly, from the place where Helen Keller was born. Now, Helen Keller was born into a privileged family that lived on an estate in the post-Civil War era of Northwest Alabama. Her father was a newspaper publisher, among other things. And As a baby, she contracted what was referred to then as scarlet fever. And we're not entirely sure exactly what scarlet fever was, but we know that it was sufficient to render Helen Keller deaf and blind and largely mute, because hearing is the ability to hear is critical in the ability of learn in the ability to learn to speak. And even in that era, people would have been thrilled to have a vaccine that would keep that from happening, because Helen Keller, for instance, was merely one of the most noteworthy examples of what that disease could do. If, for instance, ever so many people have read Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House series, and you may recall that her elder sister, Mary Ingalls, also as a child contracted what was referred to as scarlet fever and was rendered blind by it. But we now have in this country, oh Jesus, did I pull up the soapbox and climb on it? Sorry. We now have in this country a noisy, paranoid, weird-ass, right-wing plurality that is screaming that the government is imposing upon their liberty by suggesting that that it might be a good idea for their children not to get sick. That's where we are. It makes me feel like I'm liquored up to even say that.
Correct.
I mean,
stump liquor?
Yeah. You know, the real mean shit. Through a straw. I mean, where else in the world can you find... I got an echo here.
Yeah, Barbara's echoing.
Oh, okay.
Me?
Yeah.
All better now. Are there other countries? How about emerging countries like India and China? Do they have a problem with anti-vaxxers? Does anybody know?
No, I don't think so. I think Bill and Melinda Gates got a big malaria deal going on over there. Or something.
Right, we're actually trying to vaccinate for vaccinatable diseases. In countries where such diseases, yep, malaria being one of them, Sparky, precisely. So is there a noisy plurality of people in the UK who are screaming about vaccinations? How about France? Sweden? Norway? Germany? Italy? Greece? Iraq? Now, I think one of the few places on planet Earth where smallpox still occasionally breaks out is Pakistan. But I will warrant, I'll even guess, that if Pakistan had the power to wipe out smallpox in its population, do you think they would hesitate? Or do they have a contingent of people over there saying, oh no, we can't do that, for it is the will of Allah? Because that's what lies at the heart of these religious exemptions. It's the will of God. If my youngin gets it, well, I guess that means I just got a sinful baby.
Remember when they were going after Osama bin Laden?
Mm-hmm.
They sent the doctor to the compound to try to see if the children had been vaccinated.
Yeah. And of course, look at the negative repercussions that had. Thanks, CIA.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Carol.
I've got the vaccine schedule for China. They vaccinate their kids against something called BCG, hepatitis B, polio, diphtheria, measles, mumps, rubella, encephalitis, ECM group A, epidemic cerebrospinal meningitis, and A, B, and C, and hepatitis A. And that's in China.
And I'll bet you there's no noisy weirdos over there screaming, we're being oppressed by the commie government by making us get vaccinations. So, I mean, what does a hillbilly accent sound like in China, really?
I'm pretty sure they kill their noisy people over there. I don't think they get to complain.
They're vaccinating in China for more things than they are here in the United States. I can tell you right now. We do measles, mumps, rubella, and you have to ask for those extra things, meningitis. I don't think we vaccinate for that. When I had my daughter, we didn't. But I can tell you, if they passed a law like that here, and I had a child in school that had been vaccinated or hadn't been vaccinated, I wouldn't send my child to school.
Well, guess what? Barbie, you already live in a state that has a religious exemption for vaccinations.
Oh, I know, but I don't understand it. It's so rare, the side effects. They're rarer than if somebody got the disease or... Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I do.
The side effects are far, far less. I'd rather have the side effects, take my chances with the side effects, than run the risk of my child getting the disease, getting smallpox or getting measles or getting, you know.
Well, but the worst part of it, Barbie, is that they're just making stuff up now. I mean, consider Rand Paul. Libertarian ophthalmologist.
Hey, he's a doctor.
Yep.
Self-certified.
Mm-hmm.
In more ways than one.
Well, ain't that the truth? But, you know, so there he is, and he makes the claim that vaccines lead to mental disorders.
No.
I mean, this is stunning in its degree of stupid.
I'd like to know where he got his doctor's degree then.
Baylor University.
I don't believe they teach in that there.
No, he didn't. No, he got this.
Sure,
he got. He got this from the Alex Jones Libertarian Party. That's where it came from.
Were there any doctors other than him involved in this discovery?
In this what?
In this discovery of his.
Oh, no, because it happened only inside his own fetid imagination. So, just for a minute, this thing goes on for a while, but I'm going to see if we can find our way to the fun part.
Oh, jeez.
This is that interview on CNN, on CNBC that I referenced, in which Rand Paul gets downright nasty.
Shh,
of course, that's a... of course, that's a short trip for Rand Paul, but just check this out. Come on.
Here, that's important for our investors, but I just have to begin by asking, did you really just say to Laura Ingraham that you think most vaccines in this country should be, quote, voluntary?
Well, I guess being for freedom would be really unusual. I guess I don't understand the point. Why that?
Anybody? Bueller? Running, screaming from the room, tearing at your hair? Because he thinks vaccines should be voluntary because, you know, freedom. Has this stupid bastard ever seen a child with the measles? You know what I mean?
I don't know. Does he treat them in his ophthalmology practice?
Well, I rather doubt that, don't you? But
then I'm guessing he probably hasn't.
No, nor does he care, because he's a libertarian, and the heart of libertarianism is screw you. Pull yourself up by your Ayn Rand brand bootstraps. Why don't you? Let's see if he's got. He's probably got a little bit more crazy to say.
It would be controversial.
Senator, maybe you're not aware, but there's a huge problem right now with Disney theme parks having to close down because of mumps, not enough children being vaccinated against measles, mumps, and rubella because their parents, for whatever reason, have decided that it is voluntary. And I can tell you plenty of the people who I work with are really concerned about their kids getting sick at school.
Here's the thing is that I think vaccines are one of the greatest medical breakthroughs that we had. I'm a big fan and a great fan of the history of the development of the smallpox vaccine, for example. But, you know, for most of our history, they have been voluntary. So I don't think I'm arguing for anything out of the ordinary. We're arguing for what most of our history has had.
I understand that you're all for the choice, but again, if we're left in a situation where, you know, diseases that were once almost wiped out are now coming back because people are deciding not to vaccinate their kids, isn't that a problem?
I think public awareness of how good vaccines are for kids and how they are good for public health is a great idea. You know, we just appointed a surgeon general. These are some of the things that are things that we should promote as good for our health. But I don't think there's anything extraordinary about resorting to freedom. I'll give you a good example. You know, the hepatitis B vaccine is now given to newborns. We sometimes give 5 and 6 vaccines all at one time. I chose to have mine delayed. I don't want the government telling me that I have to give my newborn hepatitis B vaccine, which is transmitted by sexually transmitted disease and or blood transfusions. Do I think it's ultimately a good idea? Yeah, and so I had mine staggered over several months. I've heard of many tragic cases of walking, talking, normal children who wound up with profound mental disorders after vaccines. I'm not.
So there you have it. He went there. Absolutely no evidence, utterly discredited. He made the autism argument without saying autism. What do you do with that? Apart from maybe even getting religious and praying that this guy never gets anywhere near the corridors of power. You know, not a rhetorical question. Oh, by the way, I almost forgot. Hey, welcome to the program. I think, is that you, Kevin?
Yeah. Hold on. Sorry, it took a minute to get to the phone.
Sorry. I'm right here.
Yeah. I wanted to suggest maybe if we told these people that we needed vaccines against Ebola, maybe that would convince them. You know,
they're testing an Ebola vaccine in Africa even now.
I know. But as fearful as they were about the Ebola and how badly they screamed about Obama and the Ebola and he wasn't doing anything, perhaps if we just told them it was the Ebola vaccine.
Well, I kind of thought, I liked Michael and Madison's idea that he put forward on Facebook earlier today. Barack Obama should have not said anything about vaccines the other on Super Bowl Sunday, or instead of not say, maybe he, instead of saying people should get vaccinated, maybe what he should have done is said, listen, don't anybody get vaccines. I don't want anybody getting vaccines. And the teabaggers would have run out and gotten in line and stood in line to be vaccinated.
Exactly. Yep, that's it. I don't know why Obama hasn't caught on yet 6 years into his presidency. If he suggests anything, they're automatically going to be against it. So, ergo, you use reverse what psychology you can use on these people and, you know, suggest the exact opposite of what they want to do. And bingo, you know, hey, it just, I had an uncle that was born sometime around 1928 or so. He was 12 when he caught it. I'm not sure what it was. It might have been that scarlet fever, yellow fever, something like that. He ended up being in a home the rest of his life because he was so brain damaged. And whatever it was he had at the time, there was no vaccine against. And, of course, that was the same time polio was such a big concern. But if these, you know, you mentioned Helen Keller.
And what about FDR? What about FDR? I mean, the country had a very, very popular sitting president whom they elected 4 times.
Yep.
as a living witness to what a horror that disease can be.
But remember, FDR had to hide his disability most of the time. He very rarely was filmed trying to walk or stand with the results of his disease and how it crippled him. And that's what the what you said a while ago about these people saying, oh, it's just the will of God that my child get this, that's part of the problem. Because if they believe it's just the will of God that a child gets sick and be brain damaged in whatever way it happens the rest of their life, then that's the answer to them. And they don't want to find a solution, because if you just accept that it's God's will, then why bother to look for a solution? And they would, in a minute, condemn their own child to something they wouldn't want to get 1,000 miles near. And that's, you know, it just, it angers me so much. Because I deal a lot in the disabled community around here, and I see kids that were born developmentally disabled and the struggles they go through. And vaccines had nothing to do with it. It happened when they were born. And for these people to go around screaming about vaccines or causing it, I sent you a link via Twitter to a post in the Hub Post. It was yesterday. I couldn't understand the man's name, but he wrote a letter about his daughter back around 1980-something. He died in 86, I think. But his daughter got the measles vaccine got measles in 1962 and ended up dying for it.
It happens.
It was the author, Roald Dahl.
Thank you. Because my accessible software said, it sounded like Rove Carl to me on the accessible software, and I knew that wasn't right. So, it's just, if you read that letter and you have any love toward your child at all, there would be nothing stopping you from making sure that didn't happen to your child. And yet, you get people like Grandpa screaming about freedom and Wolverines and, you know, so it just, I don't know. What else can you say? I mean, I really, you know, there was a Super Bowl commercial too, Bob. The nationwide commercial that everyone was talking about and how much of a downer it was.
I don't even know if I remember it.
Yeah, it was a nationwide, did a commercial about, started out with a 12-year-old kid or something like that saying, I would love to be watching the halftime show and would love being able to run and play in that, but I'm dead. And it was a commercial promoting safe homes and, you know, make sure preventable accidents don't happen.
No reference to firearms, of course.
I don't know. But, you know, everybody was complaining, oh, it was a big downer on Super Bowl Sunday.
Well, the one I liked the least was the stupid Nissan commercial that managed to take a deeply moving song, Harry Chapin's Cat's Cradle, and turn it into wanting to grow up to be a race car driver? What? Excuse me?
Yeah. I listened to most of the game on the radio. I heard about the nationwide commercial the next day, but I've since caught the commercial, and yeah, it's kind of a downer, but preventable accidents kill any number of children in a day across this country, and if you can do something as make sure your cabinet under your kitchen sink is locked from getting into the hands of a 2-year-old, why not? You know.
Sure, but that entails, and to be honest, I'm going to have to go and watch it. That entails. Can you imagine including firearms in that? Because we know for a fact that the children are at greater risk in houses that have firearms in them. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
It's just a fact. But can you imagine nationwide including that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and just that Saturday, I think it was, before the Super Bowl, was a story about the kid that shot his mother and dad because he got into his mom's purse and shot both parents. Both of them lived, but, you know, how preventable was that?
Yeah, and by the way, yeah, and in that particular case, I think mommy was pregnant, wasn't she? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Dan. She says, to Rand Paul and that floppy thing on his head, freedom's just another word for so much left to lose. Best when sung to the melody written by Christofferson and Foster and later sung by the great Janis Joplin. Well, isn't that the truth? I'm getting tired of freedom and liberty being used as the sort of the boot stand for anything that the right wing doesn't like. But, you know, there we were last night. We had that editorial that Ron and Raleigh provided from the resident scholar Michael Strain at the American Enterprise Institute, arguing that we needed to let people die and get rid of Obamacare and let some people die, and that would be okay because people die in car crashes and they die from handguns too. Well, isn't that the same argument here? Aren't the they just don't dare, you know, where children are concerned, they don't dare get away with it. But that's their argument. That's the libertarian argument. Well, let's not force people to get immunizations for their children. Sure, some of their children will die, but freedom.
Yep.
Anybody ever been to a child's funeral?
Yep.
Not a lot of freedom celebrating going on there. Not much at all. Oh, by the way, and I imagine. Haley has popped into the Horn Malloy Skype chat. Good evening, Haley.
Hello, everyone. I am definitely multitasking tonight. There is a lot of mischief being done at the insane asylum on the Capitol Hill in Little Rock, Arkansas, as of this week, and it's already turning into a doozy.
They all are, aren't they? All of these teabagger legislatures, and some congressmen. I saw an article regarding Mo Brooks, and Mo Brooks actually represents the congressional district where I grew up, and he is an embarrassment to the entirety of it. Mo Brooks suggested to a radio host that he should have done a citizen's arrest of Michelle Obama's invited guest to the State of the Union, a dreamer. A young woman who is about to graduate from college, and has been and has benefited from the little bit of humane decency afforded to her by President Obama's executive action. Mo Brooks, Republican, teabagger, insisted, laughing, to this radio host with whom he was talking, that said radio host should have gone over and detained. Kidnapped. It would be kidnapping in this case. But he called it a citizen's arrest of a human being who had done absolutely no wrong whatsoever.
I'd have liked to see him get past the Secret Service.
Would have been kind of fun, wouldn't it, Carol?
Sure would have.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. Well, we've had three bills introduced into the Arkansas legislature the last couple of days. Let me run those down. First, there is a bill a license to discriminate bill that's been introduced yesterday.
Another potty bill, is it?
Yeah, kind of. The second one is to forbid municipalities such as what Fayetteville attempted to do, or any other city in Arkansas, from enacting civil rights ordinances that go above and beyond what is in the state. In other words, this will outlaw any municipality from enacting a civil rights ordinance that is LGBT inclusive. And that's going before a Senate committee on Thursday. And since Thursday is a day off for me, I'm going to be in Little Rock that day.
And that's no short hop, skip, and a jump for you, is it?
It's an hour away, and it ain't a problem. I payday's Wednesday. I'm going to be up there early. It's going to be at 10 a.m. in the state capitol, Little Rock, room 272. And the other bill that was introduced today, well, Arkansas's got them a case of Florida envy.
Oh, no. Guns?
Yes, but yes, it's
shoot them if you got them.
The stand your ground bill's coming to Arkansas. It is, let me look here. I got so many tabs up right now. I've got it up right here. I actually got the text, the PDF file. House Bill 1240. And this, the title of the bill is An Act Concerning the Use of Deadly Physical Force in Defense of a Person, to be known as the Stand Your Ground Law and for Other Purposes. I think that's self-explanatory.
Yeah, especially the other purposes part.
Wow, they hit the fucked our trifecta there in Little Rock.
Put it in the cheap seats, didn't they, Carol?
Right up there.
Well, I mean, this stuff, it really is all over the country, and I guess Arkansas has just decided it doesn't have enough different ways for young black teenagers to die. So, you know, freedom, right?
Well, we got like West Virginia, Arkansas has a virtually veto-proof state legislature, which means a simple majority is all you need for an override. Plus, we got our new Republican governor, and we got a new Republican attorney general. We got a new Republican land commissioner. In fact, all seven constitutional offices in Arkansas for the first time in modern times are Republicans.
Biscuit doesn't like it worth a damn.
No, he doesn't.
Well, there's another story floating around out there that I thought might be interesting to the group, because I've seen it all over the place. This is just charming. So, Thom Tillis, T-H-O-M, Thom Tillis, newly elected teabagger senator from North Carolina stand, he doesn't want to be left out in the cold when it comes to hating job-killing regulations. And so, yesterday, he was giving a talk at the, anybody want to guess what kind of a think tank this is? The Bipartisan Policy Center. He was giving a talk there. This would be a good time to have the hockey pucks handy. He says, I was having this discussion with someone, and we were at a Starbucks in my district, and we were talking about certain regulations where I felt like maybe you should allow businesses to opt out. Let an industry or business opt out as long as they indicate through proper disclosure, which would be, interestingly, a regulation, wouldn't it? Through advertising, through employment, literature, whatever else, there's this level of regulations that maybe they're on the books, but maybe you can make a market-based decision as to whether or not they should apply to you. Market-based. Now, we all remember, I presume, when Rachel Maddow interviewed Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and at that time Kentucky Senate hopeful, and asked him how he felt about civil rights, and he said, the Civil Rights Act probably shouldn't have been law, because the free market can sort that kind of thing out. It's fantasy thinking. It's like Todd Akin. Was it Todd Akin, Carol? The human body has ways of shutting that down. Was that Todd?
Oh, yeah.
So they just imagine stuff and then say it. So enter Thom Tillis. And he says that about the time he was saying that, a Starbucks employee come walking out of one of the restrooms. And the person sitting at his table said, and we're assuming that this is all true, it's coming from Thom Tillis, so, you know, he's a teabagger, and take it with a grain of... they were at Starbucks, so it'll be a grain of artisanal pink Indian Ocean salt or something like that. And the person at the table watching the person come out of the restroom said, "Don't you believe that this regulation that requires this gentleman to wash his hands before he serves you food is important?" And Tom Tillis responds, saying, "I think it's one I can illustrate the point." I said, "I don't have any problems with Starbucks if they choose to opt out of this policy, as long as they post a sign that says we don't require our employees to wash their hands after leaving the restrooms. The market will take care of that."
Okay, well, I want to serve him one of those chocolate biscuits and let him guess whether or not that's really chocolate.
Oh, they pissed me off now. Guess what, Bob?
What's that?
They've scheduled two of these committee meetings at the same time on the same day.
Well, that was no accident, now was it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's no accident. That was a... Yeah, the other bill I'm referring to is the Religious Freedom Bill. It is House Bill 1228. It's going to be the committee meeting is going to be the very same time as the other bill I was mentioning a few minutes ago.
Well, what's the Religious Freedom Bill do?
Oh, it is the title, to enact a Conscience Protection Act and to provide remedies and penalties for violating or abusing religious protections, and to declare an emergency.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is the pharmacists don't have to dispense slut medicine bill.
That's right.
Them precious little fundy fundamentalist evangelical consciences. It must be hell having one of those. Look, it's all of a part. And the fact that this is happening in Arkansas, in Alabama, in West Virginia, Arizona, Kansas, wherever, doesn't this tell us that this is not an accident, that this is not a mistake, that this is all being coordinated from somewhere? And I don't mean to get all Alex Jones, and I'm not going to say anything about false flags or the New World Order, but it's almost statistically impossible that a bunch of booger eaters are going to have the same idea at the same time in wildly different places. Or have the paranoids just come and got me?
No.
They've not gotten you.
Well, isn't Alex lobbying things still going strong?
Well, yeah, and that's the point. I think, you know, This stuff is just being it's being emailed to them in morning. You know, it's your morning teabagger legislation packet. I mean, the very notion. Tom Tillis here with his restroom comment and hand washing. That's probably one where every business that did that would go out of business. But I think it's good to illustrate the point that it's the sort of mentality that we need to have to reduce the regulatory burden on this country.
Well,
this jackass, this idiot, this addle-pated booby just suggested that a bill that says no hand, restaurant workers have to wash their hands after going potty, again, obsessed with the potty, is a regulatory burden. Get that all the way down to the ground. It's a burden.
Do they have signs in the bathrooms?
Well, there's a sign in the bathroom that says all employees have to wash their hands.
Okay, so it's just like California.
And so that's a regulatory burden. Instead, it won't be. And it's just to get a really good working handle on how the teabag mind works, it is not a regulatory burden to put up a sign, to require them to put up a sign, because that's still a regulation, that says this business doesn't require its employees to wash their hands after they go potty. That's how intelligent these people are.
One thing that's pissed me off here is the grocery stores move their shopping carts outside the store with no sanitized wipes out there, so you can get a wipe first and then wipe the handle of the grocery cart.
So you got to go in, grab the wipe, and go back out.
If it's still there, I haven't looked.
We have them at our grocery store.
Hmm?
We have them at the Hooterville Shopping, Rob.
Yeah, but they moved the carts outside, and it used to be the hand wipes thing was right next to the shopping carts as you come in the door. What they did is they moved the shopping carts outside so they could put more product where they had the shopping cart corral as you walked in the door.
Well, see, the free market will take care of this, take care of that, Sparky, in Tom Tillis' world. Only it won't. Because, see, and I know you know what I'm getting at here. Let's live in Tom Tillis' deregulated world for a minute, and restaurants that put up a big sign that says, our employees do not wash their hands after going to the potty, and it's up, and they have to put it in their advertising, but that's not a regulatory burden. But anyway, so it's there. Well, Tom Tillis says that business is going to go out of business. You really think they would? What if they've got a not a dollar menu? What if they've got a quarter menu? How many hungry people are going to wind up going there? Oh, hell, it's cheap. I mean, I probably ain't going to get sick just because they went to the bathroom or nothing. I mean, what the hell? It's cheap. And so I guess there's a certain amount of truth, isn't there, in the fact that the market's going to sort this out. It's going to sort it out by sending only the most desperate people into this establishment, and the place will probably effing thrive. Because that's how the market works.
Well, it will until the cases of food poisoning skyrocket, and then by that time they will, of course, pocket that money and be able to defend all the pesky lawsuits and the criminal charges.
Oh, what? No. Wait, Haley. What lawsuits? Because we're going to make sure that they're immune from lawsuit too, because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is there to remind them that they don't want their state to become a judicial hellhole by letting people actually sue businesses for poisoning them.
Fuck the Chamber of Commerce.
Not with anyone else's, nor my own. That was almost a Betty Rubble there. I'm not sure who was responsible.
Well, I'm just wondering how far they're going to take this. I mean, do they want their surgeons not scrubbing up before they go into surgery? Is that a violation for that?
No, absolutely. Absolutely, Carol, because the free market will take care of that as long as the surgeon has to advertise and have a sign on his door that says, I don't wash my hands before surgery.
Wrong.
This is the miracle of the American libertarian free market. This is how crazy these stupid bastards are. Oh, and by the way, in response to my previous question about anti-vaxxers in the civilized world, a note came in from Asa in Vancouver. Bob, there's no need to go halfway around the globe. We got some restaurant-quality anti-vaxxers right here in your backyard, and some of them are not exactly right-wing booger eaters. What does that tell you? And that's true. And that's another meme that I've seen being pushed out there lately, this is something that the extreme left fringe and the extreme right fringe both agree on. The extreme right doesn't want to be have their liberty infringed upon, and the extreme left is convinced that it causes autism. In other words, the extreme left thinks they're acting in a scientific way, and the extreme right is, they're just still booger eaters. But the larger point that I think the left side is demonstrably smaller. And frankly, I consider, I'm pretty left. But vaccinations? No. Because again, I note that I was, I got the measles because somebody sent a kid to school who had the measles and my vaccine didn't work. By the way, note coming in. Thank you, Carol. Note coming in via Carol from Marshall. Regulatory burden? How about universalized, standardized practices that are written down and enforced so you don't have to figure it out yourself and can focus on, gee, of all things, your business? Removing them simply means that everybody has to figure it out for themselves. Wow. Just wow. Oh, and by the way, here at 3 minutes past 8 o'clock in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, thanks going out to James for being the first in this evening and helping helping us with fundraising this evening. We have now only $115 to go to reach the fundraising goal for this particular Titanic Tuesday. Thank you very, very kindly, James. Let me finish the note here from Marshall. Removing them simply means those that don't figure out similar standards via, I guess, osmosis will utterly and unnecessarily fail. It's an abject loss of market information and trust. How enlightened of them. Well, that too. I mean, it's not like the regulatory burdens are out there to try to put businesses under. But that's the argument being put forward by these profiteers. Ultimately, they don't give a damn about what happens to anybody, whether they get sick, whether they're poisoned, whether they get E. coli, yada, yada, yada. They don't care. They just want a capitalistic society in which there is no restraint whatsoever on the capitalists. Period. At all. Ever. I mean, remember, even the concept of workers' compensation. Workers' compensation is a notion that began to take hold around the arrival of the 20th century. And it was designed not for the sake of working people who had been injured and maimed on the job. It was designed for the benefit of the capitalists, of the industrialists, of the employers. And it said, listen, worker, even if your employer does something stupid that causes you to get maimed, we're not going to let you sue them anymore. They are immune from suit. All you can do is take a little pittance in your pocket to compensate you for your injury and your time off work. No punitive damages, though. Screw you. Everything is geared, and oddly enough, the hottest, most, well, look at the German economy. Workers there are probably better protected than workers in any other country in the world. And I don't see the German economy collapsing. Is it? I mean, there are euro problems, but it's not related to the fact that a German worker is safer on the job than a worker in, say, South Carolina. By the way, a couple of notes coming in. One coming from our friend Luda in regard to immunizations. Luda says, Bob, I can tell you, without a doubt, on the res or any Indian community, the immunization record is 100%. After all the crap we went through with disease, you figure the country could learn from our extreme heartache. I mean, come on. Look what measles alone did. I just don't understand living in a bubble. And frankly, I think we can talk about this in demographic terms. When you look at anti-vaxxers, by a huge, huge majority, and y'all tell me if you think I'm wrong, by a huge majority, don't you kind of slap your head and go, white people? Because I don't think the new Black Panther Party's out there advocating against vaccines. By the way, this note coming in from Steve in China, who notes, and a Florida cracker by birth, subject line, shoot civil rights. It seems to me that those two pieces of Arkansas legislation kind of fit hand in glove with one another. You got your right to shoot someone in the street for spitting at your shoes bill, and your put the brakes on too much of them civil rights bill. You know, like the right not to get shot down in the street civil right. Leave it to the old South to write dual legislation with built-in cosmic irony. Nice observation, Steve. When Steve mails it in, he never mails it in.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, dear. Wait. Just got a communique from the angry Indian. Yes, they are. The new Black Panther Party does for sure. Oh, no. Advocate against vaccination? Still, I still say it's a tiny, that they're a tiny slice of that demographic plurality. This is a first world white people privilege problem in to a large extent. Oh, but I mentioned the Chamber of Commerce a few minutes ago. If you listen to Dr. Bill's archive for today, you'll find that The president of the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce gave an address in Beckley today in which Dr. Bill was in attendance, at which, but anyway. And he argued that, first of all, this is one of those numbers that would make Sandra scream, because we've talked about what the real unemployment numbers in this country are. There is a statistic, and I know it's just about West Virginia, so who gives a damn, right? But there is a statistic that shows that fully half of the work-capable workforce in West Virginia is unemployed. 50%. I mean, those are the kind of numbers that you get in the developing world. And apparently it is a number that is agreed to by left and right alike. So enter a guy named Steve Roberts, who is the head of the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce, who today, in an address in Beckley, said that we have to... No, it's going to take a minute, and there may be some running and screaming and tearing at hair. The best way to put more people to work in West Virginia, he really did make this argument, is to cut the wages of the people who actually at least have jobs. I shit you not. Because he argued that we have to...
When they can't afford to live indoors and eat food...
Right. As one of our dear friends points out, one of our friends in Wisconsin... the Republican Party and the teabaggers and the birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, etc., libertarians, will not be happy until we all live in the dark and shit in a bucket. And they'll charge us for the bucket. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine. I just don't understand how they think that people can work for $2.50 an hour and live in... I mean, how are they supposed to get to work when you can't afford the gas to put in the car?
Right.
Or live indoors or eat. I mean, eventually they just die.
And sooner or later, the wealth class is going to realize that they need somebody to do their shit work for them, aren't they?
And there's plenty of shit work to be done.
I mean, and see, the nature of his argument was that we have got to, and they've made this argument for years, and it's never been any more or less specious than it is right now. It's just that they're going to get away with it this time. They argue that we have to eliminate prevailing wage and impose right to starve legislation on this state, and that doing so will increase employment. Of particular interest, and I know, for instance, those who have been involved in the building trades know this. Prevailing wage legislation applies primarily to construction jobs. If you're building Building A, you need a construction crew in all of its various forms, whether it be the dirt work, the electrician work, the getting it under roof work, all of that stuff, carpenters, plumbers, etc. You only need a certain number of human beings to build any given building, right? Well, this is how damn dumb these right-wingers are, Chamber of Commerce included. They say that by slashing the wages of the crew that builds that building, more workers will be hired to build the building, even though it only requires a finite number of workers. And if you put it to them that way, they'll respond, well, no. We're just saying that more buildings will be built. Well, that's just bullshit and untrue. Because there's only X amount, there's only Y amount of building revenue. And as Boss Man Wayne pointed out, we've actually found out that building a school with prevailing wage labor costs less in West Virginia than it does to build a building in surrounding states with non-union labor. Go figure. Exit screaming. I mean, does that make any sense to you, Sparky?
He said he's going to be right back.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure I hadn't lost the audio from everybody.
It's a really good deal for the one percenters. They can pay half of what they were paying. Yeah, more buildings will be built because it won't cost the one percenters but half as much. Meanwhile, the workers who are being told freedom are getting paid half as much. And like Bob said, you know, you got the right to starve. And it boggles my mind that so many people buy into this. I just got an email. We're trying to pass a right to die bill here in Colorado, and it's going before committee this week, and gotten a couple email alerts about it. How much would you bet that the same people that are talking about freedom and regulation will be the exact same ones that will be in opposition to this right to die with dignity bill?
Well, sure, because Jesus.
Exactly. And yet, you know, people don't seem to realize that. By the way,
a note coming in from Robert in Australia, reference vaccines. Robert says, my parents remember polio. I don't. I do, however, remember having the vaccination for it in primary school. It was what looked like jam on a small plastic spoon. I think we received it 3 times over a period of a few weeks. Every single child in the school, about 1,000, received it. No one even questioned it. I've only ever seen the effects of polio on newsreels from the 1950s. I'm one of the first generation not to experience it. As for choice and morals and all the other arguments for not vaccinating, the disease does not care what you think or believe. It will spread itself anywhere and everywhere it can, when it can. And he adds, by the way, does the Bible talk about vaccinations and microbes and disease transmission? It doesn't, as far as I know, meaning there are no religious grounds for refusing vaccinations. Precisely. What we're talking, for instance, there are children, and I mean this isn't make believe. This isn't anecdotal. This is reality. There are children who have been within the care of medical professionals and have been allowed to die for want of something as simple as a blood transfusion, because their parents were Jehovah's Witnesses, whose religion, whose all-knowing, all-loving, all-seeing Creator God, they think, according to the lights of the inventor of their faith, forbids corruption of the blood. And therefore a child needing a transfusion, whose life would be saved by the same, simply dies.
And I still call it child neglect.
I call it murder.
You know what?
Manslaughter. What, Barbie?
I had to deal with that all the time. In many of the hospitals that I worked in, we would be called for testing for a transfusion immediately on a child, and we would have to first check and see if they were Jehovah Witnesses, and there were many times that they were, and we absolutely had to sit on our hands and not do anything, because it was based on a religious belief, and we saw a lot of kids, you know, go to surgery, and it was just like a kiss and a prayer if they came out, because they couldn't have a transfusion. Sometimes they couldn't even have a surgery based on religious beliefs. A human being. And
Barbie, do you think that the founders of this country, the framers of the Constitution, vaunted as they are, who were indeed men of the Enlightenment, who were not necessarily bound up by a bunch of religious malarkey, do you think that they contemplated that in crafting the First Amendment, that they were going to sign the death warrants of children 100 years in the future, 150?
Absolutely not.
Because we're talking about people who reveled in what small advances were made in science at the time. They cherished it. Exactly. That was freedom, the freedom to inquire.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's why I argue that our sensitivities to religion in this country have gotten, and I suppose if there was a larger audience and we had right wingers listening and stuff, there would be a headline tomorrow on some website, you know, liberal talker wants to suppress religion. Liberal talker says religious freedom has gotten out of hand. But it has, Barbie. It has.
Yes. Yes, it has. Make them stand in that child's room and watch him fade away.
Watch them die based on religion. But, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses do, and they just think that their child is part of the elect and is going, you know, and they're going to go to
exactly.
the great big jimboree in the sky.
At times I felt like, I'll go to jail. Let me do it. I'll go to jail. And it was, you know, we would have to get, it depended on the doctor. They would have to go get court orders. And, you know, the parents always won.
And, well, here's a question, Barbie. What would happen? You know that old saying, it is easier to ask forgiveness than permission.
Absolutely.
What happens if you give the dying child the transfusion? Do the parents then take the child home and kill it for being religiously, ritually impure?
No. They sue the hospital and everybody else for violating their religious rights.
And you really think a jury wouldn't listen to that case and go, you've got a living child. Shut the up and go home.
Depends on whose lawyer's the best.
And what state you're in.
Yeah.
But hey, as long as I can shit in a bucket and not wash my hands afterwards for Jesus, I'm good.
Yeah.
Interesting to me that the same people that claim to be for the right to life are the same ones that promote death by not doing all you can to save a child's life.
Good argument.
And indeed, when we talk about the Jehovah's Witness exception, we can at least say this much. That by refusing blood products, the parents are only killing their own child. Now, that is just a heinous and brutal way to express something, and I acknowledge it. It feels dirty and filthy and vile coming out of my own mouth.
That's how we felt.
But when we're talking about the anti-vaxxers, it is not their children only that they are putting at risk. They're sending little Timmy Tetanus into the public schools armed with their exemption or Typhoid Tiffany, who can then infect an entire school.
Bob, I found it very interesting when you were playing what Rand Paul said, that I'm pretty sure I heard this right. He was advocating for freedom, that a parent should be able to vaccinate their child or not, and he did vaccinate his. I'm pretty sure I heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Just not when...
Well, because he's cantankerous and he's all about the freedom, so he knew better than that board-certified doctor who was, you know, kowtowing, bowing and scraping to the man. And so he knew better, and he was going to put him on a different immunization schedule.
That's asinine. And he's making people believe, oh, you should be able to have the freedom not to vaccinate your child, but I am going to vaccinate mine. Like, mumble it under his breath.
Yeah.
He knows what he's saying.
He's a hypocrite. But
exactly.
again, if this was such a if this was such a left right issue, if there were so many lefties out there who were opposed to this, it wouldn't be every Republican wannabe who's saying this crazy crap.
It's a human issue.
No, but they're barking to the cheap seats of their own fans. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But they were trying to make it a both sides do it issue this morning on Morning Joe.
Oh yeah, I heard that all over the place.
The lowest rated cable show in the morning, you mean?
and you know it
was all over Facebook today.
And if you watch it, you understand why, Carol. They're trying anything to make it interesting. They've even banished Joe to the control room and put a headset on him to make it look like he actually knows something about the production of his program. And so they've got a camera on him in the control room where he talks to guests, but the only person out there doing the interview, like the last, and you know, it really feels panderish. They've got what they do is they put Mika out there by herself on a stool, and they usually have a female guest come in and they talk about stuff that's important to women. And that's not me being misogynistic, and I hope it's not taken that way. It's just so nakedly an attempt to fix something that is terminally ill. And that is, you know, the problem's kind of Mika. But the much larger problem is Joe Scarborough. That's why they exiled him to the control room to try to make it look like he's just chiming in while he's setting up a rocket launch.
I think it's to make him look like he's controlling something.
Yeah.
And they put Mika out there and make sure that they show her legs a lot.
The edict has come down from the suits that Mika shall wear Fox News attire at all times.
I know.
Except she never shows any cleavage.
I wasn't.
When is MSNBC going to pull the plug on that program?
Quick as they figure out they need to hire me. No, there we go. I said it.
I tried. I wrote the letter.
I know. Lots of people have written the letter. I'm just waiting for the call. Honest to God, I mean, this is just the let's have fun with the hypothetical portion of the program. Wouldn't it be a hoot? Me waking up and getting to have a hissy on the air, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning. Wouldn't that be a blast?
Yeah, actually, it would. It'd be even more fun if I got to be your first guest.
You are.
No.
You are. You would be.
I promise not to say fuck on national television.
Much. Oh, that was almost stereo Betty.
I know. I was trying not to laugh.
It's funny that is an idea that I've had bouncing around in my head for a very long time, that it would be fun to have the MSNBC, like, 3 o'clock in the morning slot, and instead of expecting guests to come on, we could use the miracle of, you know, like Skype. And have conversations all over the world.
Pretty exciting.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, we only thing is we'd have to make sure that we were sober first.
That's contrary to the whole idea. The reason for being on at 3 o'clock in the morning is that you get the interesting drunks, Haley.
Oh, shit.
You get the
yeah,
Bob, this is Carol calling from Hooterville. I've been hitting the peach wine, but I got something to say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you get the just now good and drunk midnight Pacific Coast crowd, and you get the up early gin yippers on the East Coast.
Yeah, that Leslie Rutledge stole my order.
See? and then you also get the noon martini crowd in you know, Mumbai.
Right, and you can have a running bet on who calls in the first report of Bill O'Reilly, Ann Coulter, and Sasquatch having a menage a trois aboard a UFO.
Exactly, Will. It's straight out of one of my favorite songs, the title cut to Donald Fagen's The Night Fly. So you say there's a race of men in the trees, you're for tough legislation. Thanks for calling. I wait all night for calls like these.
Just one request, though, that we don't have C. Crane as an advertiser. I can just picture this.
Oh, no. If it's MSNBC, that means it'll be Joseph A. Bank. And probably Koch Industries, and now Caterpillar. I love that Caterpillar, an agent for positive change in the world ad that they're running now, because every time I see it, all I can see is those great goddamn big dump trucks and D9s running around on a mountaintop removal moonscape, you know, helping to poison people below. Yeah, you tell them, Caterpillar. The rest of us know better.
We got one of them big Caterpillar with an arm thing on it, with the jaws, and he's ripping out trees down by the on the ranch over by the slough. I mean, by the where it flooded, pulling them out of the ground. I guess he's gonna make a new pasture over there for the cattle.
Well, that'll be nice. Which way is that relative to the prevailing wind to Shea Sparky?
Well, it's to the west. So.
Yeah. By the way, note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansastan. She says the real freedom granted is the freedom for the rubella virus to have its way, so to speak. For me, it's important to deconstruct freedom whenever I hear it invoked so carelessly without pragmatic regard for community.
Also giving it a chance to mutate into something worse.
Sure.
The more hosts it gets. Again, here's the problem with the anti-vaxxers, in my opinion. They are not working on a reality-based strategy. Rather, they are going by whoever they accept as an authority who does not have the backup. And this is a problem. If according to the libertarian philosophy, my rights end where yours begin and vice versa, should not logically you not have the right to infect my child? Because I'm surprised that we haven't had a few people making threats against the parents yet who did not vaccinate their children.
But how would you know?
Well, that none being revealed publicly, I should say.
I mean, that's what I was pointing out earlier in the program about this religious exemption bill that's been introduced in the West Virginia legislature. Will, there's all this stuff about who gets to and who files the and whatever. But there's nothing in there that says that the parents of innocent children by whom the parents have done right and had them vaccinated, there's nothing in there that says that they get to know that that Typhoid Timmy is walking around amongst them. As a parent, I would want to know.
Don't you have to supply proof that your kid's vaccinated so we can go to the school?
Well, yeah.
Generally, yes.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Except this new legislation that was introduced yesterday in West Virginia says that if you've got religious tenets, we went through this, T-E-N-A-N-T-S, if you've got religious tenets and a strongly held religious belief about not vaccinating your child, all you have to do is put it in an affidavit. You go to a doctor. The doctor tells you what all the vaccines are and then signs off on it and maybe should, and it says should put the date on it. It doesn't say must. And then you take it to the schools, and the schools say, oh, okay, you just go ahead. You've got sincerely held religious beliefs. You just go ahead and send send little Ebola Eddie to school with the children who with the children whose parents actually give a fuck about them.
That's when I say that you have to homeschool your kid.
No, that's the whole point. This is the little itty bitty 2 inches off the ground hoop that the fundy fundamentalist evangelical parents and the vaxxers have to jump through in order to potentially sicken the rest of our children. And I'm sorry, screw them.
There is a need to protect public health. Bob, if you recall, the average lifespan in America a century ago was, 45, 50 years? Now we have people who are living much older. I have a great aunt who's 100. But it seems as if we have people who believe that their rights trump everyone else's. And this doesn't work in a functional society. Or one that wants to even be functional.
Well, long ago, in either the late 19th or early 20th century, the head of the New York City Board of Public Health said succinctly, you can have as much public health as you are willing to pay for. And Typhoid Mary really was real. And her story is an important one that, of course, like the rest of it, like Helen Keller or FDR or Mary Ingalls, has been forgotten. But Typhoid Mary was a woman who worked as a domestic servant in the houses of the wealthy. Typhoid at that time in New York City was known for wiping out oodles of poor immigrants. But it wasn't known for reaching into the homes of the 1% of the day. And then all of a sudden, 1%ers started dying of typhoid fever, whatever. They're different, I guess. And it was through a process of investigation and logical deduction that they finally identified this woman, who came to be known as Typhoid Mary, who said, and she was an Irish immigrant, and said, why, I'm healthy as a horse. I don't have typhoid. How could I possibly be giving anybody typhoid when I don't have it? And she was, I mean, this was a big step in modern science, because they learned from her, she was the first identified case of a person who was positive for typhoid, carried typhoid, but did not have the disease. Well, the fact of the matter is, Typhoid Mary is her argument. And see, they tried to take her into custody. They did for a little while. She got out, and she immediately went back into service in these homes and immediately started making people sick again. They finally wound up having to imprison her in a sanitarium for the rest of her born days because she would not comply with the law. Now, what's the difference between Typhoid Mary and one of these goddamned anti-vaxxers?
Less than they would care to admit. Essentially, you have someone who's now using a philosophy to justify things that one's freedom is absolute, but in any society, it's not any traditional society, has laws and customs. And perhaps the key one you'll find in every culture is, you shall not endanger the community. Ergo, I'm reminded of something from Isaac Asimov's novel, The Caves of Steel, where on some of Earth's colonies, robots were used to do everything, and one colony had pretty much isolated itself to individuals who only acted remotely by video and online, and an Earth detective who was sent in for a murder there came back to report to the government where he found it. He said, I don't think we have to worry about them. They've uninvented the one invention that makes everything possible. The official asked, what's that? Community. And ultimately, in Isaac Asimov's A Long Universe, which stretches literally tens of thousands of years past that point, they pretty much became extinct on that world. So if we don't have community, what do we have? Because it's something that every society that has succeeded has kept going. And one must question if the anti-vaxxers crusade is ultimately anti-human, because community is what separates the primates and many of the mammals from, let's say, your average Gila monster in the Arizona desert. Because of community, we have been able to advance. Bob, your show cannot be put on without a bunch of people working together in different ways, from the guy maintaining the power lines to the internet servers, to Ben Birch doing his wonderful part, and of course, the listeners trying to fund the horn.
Well, yes.
And it's not Bob alone makes the show possible, but rather the infrastructure that Bob uses, the community, and all the resources you use. And I would argue that one of the key flaws of the libertarian philosophy is that it seems to forget that you need a community to generate any wealth or to have freedom, because ultimately a person living alone in the middle of a desert or a mountain is perhaps ultimately free, but does he contribute anything if all he does is remain alone? It's our communities that define us, that strengthen us. I'm a part of several different ones, including a faith community, and the key thing to remember about community is we can rely on each other. We can pull our strengths.
It's the only reason there is a human species on the planet at all. If humanity had evolved as a bunch of lone wolves wandering the savannah, we would have been picked off little by little, and not over not that long a period of time, by the other predators. It is only because we acted in concert, and of course Dr. John would be the far better exponent of this idea. We acted in concert, we acted as a community, and we survived and we continued to evolve. Okay? There is no history. There is no prehistory, to the extent that that's not a freight loaded word, of any societies that are comprised of lone wolves. And I'm talking, and I don't mean just from sedentary agricultural culture society forward. I mean at all ever among human societies, especially. Good God, we still have some hunter-gatherer tribes that we can investigate, that we can study. And without fail, they do not succeed without close interpersonal coordination and communication in the tribal group.
Right, it's basic anthropology. I mean, if there was ever a species of hominid that were lone wolves, I imagine they didn't live very long after dealing with the competition.
And well, who knows? Australopithecus robustus, by virtue of its big size, may have been the libertarian human ancestor. But you'll notice he's fucking extinct.
But I have to tell you, Will has just cogently described the fundamental flaw in libertarianism. Theirs is a survival of the fittest, dog-eat-dog, every man for himself mentality. And libertarianism is nothing more than a political theory that has never, ever successfully been put into practice on the face of this planet for a reason. Because it is fundamentally flawed.
Well, it's a loser, Carol.
People die. Of course.
And yet, so what does that say about then? What does that say about the people who continue to tenaciously hang on to an absolutely discredited theory. You know, the right wing is forever going on, well, you know, communism's impractical. Communism can't possibly work because, well, human beings just don't operate that way. Nobody, human beings ain't going to operate for the good of the, you know, for the good of the common whole. I mean, you know, people have ambitions and dreams and desires, and not everybody wants the same thing. And you know what? I'm not going to argue with them about any of that. But communism, at least to one degree or another, has been tried. It has succeeded and failed on its own legs. The only place that I can think of that true libertarianism has ever been tried is Somalia, maybe Haiti.
How'd that work out?
Right. And yet, you know, and the fact of the matter is I think. There are real parallels between libertarianism and Scientology. Hear me out.
They both posit a utopian existence and a way to get there for an elite.
And bingo on the second part, Will. I can't get anything past you. The fact of the matter is, both of them are schemes in which the proponents at the top of the pyramid reap tremendous benefit and rewards from the people at the bottom. I mean, if you are not a filthy rich Scientology convert, you're never going to come up the pyramid. They're just going to sit there and soak the money out of you, and you're going to be out there hustling that Amway laundry detergent for the rest of your natural born days, trying to find another person on the pyramid to get you up one block.
Bob, does the name Charles Ponzi and Ponzi scheme ring a bell?
Same.
Exactly. I remember I was a reporter, including a business reporter, so there was someone I covered whose name I forget who was involved in a Ponzi scheme, and literally lots of people got hurt by it.
Look at cranky old Uncle Liberty, you know, Ron Paul, as Charlie Pierce calls him. That man has made tons more money through his libertarian hustle than he ever made being a caring country doctor. He's made a hell of a his newsletter and his hustle and his dodge and his flim flam and playing to the basest most repulsive desires inside the human psyche has made him rich. And it has made Rand Paul rich. I mean, Rand Paul was a semi-licensed ophthalmologist in Bowling Green, Kentucky. It's not like the East Coast was coming to him saying, "Oh, give me sight, oh healer." Bullshit. He had a little ophthalmology practice where he was sucking in all the Medicare and Medicaid dollars he could get, and going home at night and barking at the moon about liberty, when all he has ever done is suck on the public teat.
Kind of like Paul Ryan, who got whose father died, and then he got Social Security, and his family business got rich on government road contracts.
And then he married money.
Yes. So it's kind of, how would I say it? It's kind of the issue I have with us. Former Idaho Senator Larry Craig. It's a hypocrisy. It's a hypocrisy. At least be consistent in what you say and do. But there's not even that standard met.
No. Note coming in again from Steve in China. He says, this is an interesting bit of perspective. Not Bob. Polio, 1957, first mass immunization in the U.S. Polio cases dropped from a peak of 58,000 to 5,600. I remember some kids, Steve says, I was born in 1957, walking around with those horrible metal braces. Good God, I was glad I could run around and ride a red bike. Here's all I have to say for the nutcases who don't believe in immunization. Iron lung. Jesus Christ, my ass. Regards, Steve in China. You guys are so much better at this than I am.
being a child of the 50s, I remember the polio vaccine and the sugar cube.
Yeah, yeah, y'all got it on a sugar cube. Robert in Australia got it in a little plastic spoon, and it looked like jam.
I'm so feeble, I can't remember how I got mine, but I do remember getting it.
I never got it, and I didn't get the smallpox vaccination either.
It was in the little white plastic, not paper cup, and it had a cube in it, and the nurse came out and brought a tray of them out, and we formed a line, and we walked through, and he handed it, we stood there, we threw it in our mouth, and gave them the cup, and walked away.
We got several.
That's how we got it.
We got several vaccinations. We got it, the cup, and because I remember drinking something, and they had a gun, and that's how we got the TB vaccination. That was one, and I don't know if it was one of those series where it was over a 3-week span. I just remember us standing in massive lines and going through them, and they had everybody, you know, they had like 3 or 4 people with guns and not guns.
Air guns.
Yeah.
The military uses those too. They used to get us.
Yep.
We'd have to walk through, and they give us the, are you allergic to eggs? Da 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 da.
Yep.
And you go through the line, you roll up both arms, and we hit. Mm-hmm. A medic on both sides with one of them air guns.
They did that to the kid.
It didn't want to move, because if you moved, you blew a little streak across your arm and bleed like crazy.
They did that to the kids, too.
Oh, well, I remember that gun coming in with the root. I mean, and I'm a generation different. That they came in with that gun, you know, even down in Alabamistan, and they were giving the rubella vaccine, and I was told, can't have it. You know, not because I didn't want it, but I could not have it, or it wasn't necessary or whatever, because, you know, I'd had measles. So, I mean, I guess maybe I've got a slightly different perspective on this, because I was on the receiving end of the disease. I mean, it was as sick as I ever was, because in the second semester, which we didn't know back then were called semesters, it was just, you know, back from Christmas vacation in Miss Yateman's room. God, I love that woman.
She's smiling on you.
I hope so. She had a wonderful sense of humor. She was one of those classic unmarried school teachers for whom her children were her children.
Yeah.
And she had lots of cats. And she would come to school the next day and tell us about the antics of her cats. One of whose names was, and you're going to love this, this is right up there with Cat Stevens, Carol. One of her cats was Purry Mason.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, that's adorable.
And she lived in the old part of downtown Florence. And she got all the smart kids. I mean, they did that stuff back then. Or the children who were deemed to be smart. Yeah. And, you know, back then they were at least trying, because that's not to say she got all white kids. And you know, it was an early it was an early way of teaching without overtly teaching. She told the children on the first day of class, she said, I have a paddle. They make me have a paddle. It's a nice paddle. And it was this wicked looking red lacquered son of a bitch. And she said, I don't use it. I like you. I care about you. I'm here to help you learn. I hope you want to learn as much as I want to help you learn. I mean, I remember it's almost verbatim. So I hated being out of Miss Yateman's second grade classroom, because I would stay, you know, I would stay behind to talk to her, and she, you know, she's finishing up her day, and just and conversations. The conversation urge goes, you know, strong in this one. And my parents never worried about me when I was late coming home from second grade, because, well, he's probably talking to Miss Yateman. And Miss Yateman was opening up a world to me. Because, among other things, she had lived through the Alaska earthquake of the 1960s, early 1960s. And I wanted to hear about these things. But anyway, so I hated it when I got chicken pox. And I was out for 2 weeks with chicken pox, and neighbor kids brought my homework home to me, and I sat there and continued working, burning up with fever, scratching all over the place, baths and, you know, cold water baths, all the misery of it. Went back to school for precisely 2 weeks and came home with the measles. Because some unvaccinated kid brought it to school. And I was sick for 2 more weeks, and far sicker with the measles than I had been with the chicken pox. So maybe it's a little bit of a rarity that I'm a member of, that as a member of my generation, one that was largely successfully immunized against measles, that I remember what measles was like. And so, you know, when our babies were born, we had an immunization conversation, but there was no real debate about it. We were both in absolute agreement. The children are going to get their immunizations. And it's not a tough question. But apparently it is for the privileged people who were immunized and have chosen not to immunize their own. And you know, the thing is, if you're a believer, if you're a believer in that bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky who hurls thunderbolts and works out rough vengeance on people who don't necessarily deserve it, then you say, well, you know, they'll figure it out. God's will. But I'm not quite sick or psychopathic enough to wish for their God to inflict disease on their innocent children. And that is what they are saying they want. Well, you know, if God doesn't give our kid the measles, that means God likes our kid. Hello, Calvinism!
God, he seems like such a capricious, mean prick.
Yes!
Oh, there was something else that came up today. It's come over the wire, so to speak.
And?
This involves perennial presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. A newsletter that he penned back in 1973, early in college, has surfaced. And BuzzFeed has apparently scanned it and has published it in its entirety with commentary. It's a doozy.
Topicality?
Nothing as far as you know, the gay thing, but it kind of gives you maybe a little insight into his early background, and that he was not always a Southern Baptist.
What was he? Harder or softer shell, I guess is the question.
A little bit harder.
Well, that might explain some things. I saw something out there, Haley, where he said something about What was it? What's the quote? A man's ass for me is like bacon to Jews. Look but don't touch. Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, holy hell.
No, not that. This is about how dancing is not a good thing and things like that.
Oh, for sake.
No, really, he said that.
Let me see if I can find that real quick.
I'm sorry.
I tweeted a link to it.
There it is. No, this is not real. No, this can't be real. This is a spoof. because if it was real, it would have video. It doesn't have video.
The only thing I heard him say about bacon recently...
Okay, so this is not real. Although, why is it I find it so easy to believe this? But men's
because they're all fucking crazy.
You're talking about the bacon deal? This is not about the bacon deal. This is the other one. This is about...
Oh, no, no, no. Okay, yeah, so there is another quote that's apparently real. He said that asking Christians to accept same-sex marriage is like asking someone who's Jewish to start serving bacon-wrapped shrimp in their deli.
That's the one I saw.
That makes perfect sense to somebody.
Did you see what Jon Stewart did with it last night?
No.
He had a talking bacon-wrapped shrimp with the gal, the blonde gal that's on there, that's Jason Jones' wife. I forget her name.
No, Samantha Bee.
Samantha Bee was doing the lips and the shrimp.
The talking shrimp.
Yeah. they had a little hole where you could see their lips move, so.
Yeah, the clutch cargo effect.
Yes, that yes. Because he was going after Huckabee. Huckabee was just on his show last week.
Well, yeah,
about his book.
Yeah, that's how Jon Stewart kind of nods and winks at his audience and says, you know, look, I know I had him on, but it was, you know, it's not like I don't know who this guy is. Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about going epic. I don't think we're going to go epic this evening. We've had a lovely conversation, and I think if it's okay with you guys, we'll go ahead and just wrap it up.
I'm cool.
But I'm awful glad. I was awful glad to have Will's commentary in. Thank you for popping by, Haley. You tend to be quiet, Steve, but when you're not quiet, you get it. You make the best of it. Barbie, it's good to see you in here again. Carol, we're all awfully glad to have you back home where you belong and back in the Horn chat room, back in the conversation and participating and making this the better network, better conversation that you do.
Go put them training wheels on the Mac.
Oh, God. Took me 45 minutes to find out how to find out the model number on the thing.
Just call me. If you have a problem, just call me.
Really? You can.
Well, that's true. That's true. Or I can just light the Bob signal in the sky, and otherwise known as Facebook. And help me.
That's right.
Yeah. But you know me. I'm a hardcore. I like to figure stuff out on my own.
I know. I call you for help, though, and you're there.
That's true. That is true. And yeah, when I can be of some help, I like to be of some help, and just, you know, hope that I am. So far, you know, it's really not going to be that complicated. I can understand now, looking at what I'm looking at, why it is that people who were using Apple products when Windows 5 or whatever.
3.1.
Well, no, not 3.1 for warehouses, but the next iteration that came out to run on the Pentium processors and everything with true multitasking. I understand now why the Apple people were going, Jesus, we've been doing this for years.
Yes.
Because it's pretty obvious that the Microsoft operating system is a sort of shitty Bogart of the Apple system.
It was a cheap ripoff.
That doesn't work. Witness the
that
fact
doesn't
that
work.
Yeah, or not doesn't work well. So
I promise you, once you go Mac, you never go back.
Well, one of the things I was communicating with John Fox a little bit earlier, because, and by the way, this is something we've got to get done. I need somebody to tell me how much the rent is on the mobile version of the chat room, because we got people who aren't chatting who would like to be chatting, who can't now because the rent came due on the mobile version of the chat room.
Oh. Lottie would know.
I don't remember who handled it last time. Was it Greg or Lottie or you or who?
It was Lottie. Lottie's got admin privileges.
Okay. Hopefully we'll figure that out and get the mobile version back up and running because I've had several emails about it. This evening, we pulled up a little bit short, but I want to thank James for jumping in. I want to thank Roger for knocking out the remainder of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge last night. I want to thank James for being the only person in on the fundraising this evening. We will, unless something happens in the next 21 hours, we will begin the program tomorrow evening with a fundraising goal of $265. Anybody wanting to help, well, the PayPal interface, you know, it's over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, and then there's the, and if you don't have the traditional mail address written down, shoot me a note, email, Twitter, Facebook, stand out on the porch and scream, whatever, then I'll make sure you get that. I need to put it on the website. There's a lot of things we need to do, and a lot of people tied up with a lot of stuff, and, oh, well, that's just how it goes. But thank you one and all for keeping this on the air. I'm looking forward to what I hope will be a quantum step forward in the audio quality of this program. John will, of course, probably have to wind up doing considerable hand-holding and listening to me as I weep and scream, getting used to the new mix desk, because I've used it a lot. I just haven't used it lately, and I've probably forgotten everything, and we'll have to do all the audio settings all over again. Blah, 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 blah. But it'll be better. It will get better. So thank you, all of you, one and all, for however you participate. Thanks to our extraordinary, ordinary roundtable this evening. That means thanks to Barbie, thanks to Carol, thanks to Haley, thanks to Steve, and thank you. Thank you very kindly, Sparky, for your continued moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Time to get out of here. Thanks to all of you who keep this on the air and who share your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. It's a lovely little community we've built here. It truly, truly is. And you're the ones who have built it. Thanks always go out to Ben Birch as well as John Fox, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to Lottie, and thank you to Sparky, and thank you to Texas Betsy moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.